This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us today. As Gambians look ahead to next year's general elections, analysts say that there is debate around the country about the issue of presidential term limits, with many concerned that the revised 2024 draft constitution, once enacted, will pave the way for President Adama Barrow to serve two additional terms. Adding to the political discourse is the recent rejection of the diaspora election bill, which would have allowed Gambians abroad to vote, a move that has sparked frustration among the country's significant diaspora population. For insight on the broader sentiments of Gambians as they gear up for the 2026 elections, we are joined by Sene M.K. Marena, a Gambian political analyst and publisher of the Alkamba Times, a digital newspaper covering Gambian news. Yes, Sene, thank you so much for joining us today. Now, let's start with some of your thoughts on the key changes of the 2024 draft constitution and what they mean for the future of Gambian democracy.
Thank you very much, Jackson, for having me once again. Yeah, the Gambia is at a crossroad right now with regard to the new draft constitution. If you remember, when the coalition government came into power in 2017, they promised for major reforms, including drafting of a new constitution for the country. So the Constitutional Review Commission was set up to work on drafting a new progressive constitution for the Gambia to bring an end to the self-perpetuating constitution of 1997 constitution that have total disregard for term limit. So the CRC, you know, embarked on this journey with a very broader consultation as part of its mandate. So they came up with this progressive constitution, but, you know, there was a key contention about the term limit that was proposed in the draft constitution. The government of President Adama Barrow and his surrogate did not want that clause in the draft constitution. So when the constitution was done and submitted to National Assembly for endorsement and possible referendum, it was voted out mainly by the MPs loyal to President Adama Barrow. So 3 years down the line, the government came up with their own constitution. We call it the Barrow 2024 constitution, where most of those progressive clauses were eliminated in the 2024 draft constitution. And there was no broader consultation, unlike the 2020 draft constitution. So the constitution, the 2024 constitution, supposed to be back in the parliament for discussion. But to the surprise of many Gambians, the Attorney General last week said that the draft will not be presented to the parliament next week. So it will be back in June 2025, ahead of the presidential elections in 2026. So basically, there is a growing discontent about the fate of the two draft constitution. Majority of Gambians prefer the 2020 draft than the 2024 draft, which they say, you know, did not consult broadly with Gambians from all walks of life. So as we speak now, the 1997 constitution that Jammeh brought in, you know, is still in existence. And that constitution gave the government or the president unrestricted power and without accountability.
Now, if I remember correctly, the last time we spoke about this particular issue, you were the spokesperson of the CRC. Is that correct?
Very well, yes. I was the former spokesperson of the CRC, right?
Right. So how does this new draft compare to the aspiration of the CRC when it was first established in 2018? We know that it was aimed, the CRC was aimed to establish a new democratic foundation for the Gambia after Yahya Jammeh's rule. Would you say it has succeeded in this goal, or has the process been politicized?
The process has been highly politicized. Instead of looking at the broader impact this will have on our young democracy, you know, politicians like the National People Party politicize this. They think this the CRC is politically targeting President Barrow from seeking a second term in office. So most Gambians welcome the 2020 draft because for the first time in the history of our country, we have a draft constitution that, embody the collective wills and aspiration of Gambians. This draft was very well consulted. Gambians from all walks of life were consulted to be part of the process. Even Gambians in the diaspora were consulted. CRC went to meet Gambians outside the country for them to be part and parcel of the draft constitution. So unlike the 2024 draft, which allowed the president and removed the critical clause in our previous constitution, that's the term limit. So the 2024, he removed that part of it and also removed key provisions, vetting of key position at the National Assembly. Like if the president want to appoint the IGP, he should be subjected to parliamentary oversight. But all these things have been removed, and also the Teacher Service Commission have also been removed.
So you're saying that the draft constitution as it stands right now is not as popular as the 2020 draft?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's not popular.
How do you assess the level of public consultation in the drafting process of both the 2020 and the 2024 versions? I know you were involved somehow in the 2021.
Absolutely. You cannot compare the 2020 draft with the 2024 draft. These are like two complete documents. The 2020 draft has, engaged Gambians from all walks of life. You know, the CRC traveled to the, to the breadth and length of the country and in the diaspora to engage citizens, about their take on the drafting of the 2020 constitution. Unlike the 2024 constitution, it was only the cabinet that sat over this document. When they were ready, that was the time they came out to the public and told us that, hey, we have a new constitution 2024. Everyone was smart, including the civil society, who were very active during the previous consultation with the 2022 draft constitution. So they said they were not consulted. The politicians, like the opposition, who are also key stakeholders, said they were not consulted. So basically, when that happened, everybody start to distance him or herself from the 2024 draft constitution. Many in Banjul refer to as a Barrow draft 2024.
We're chatting with Sene MK Marena. He is a political analyst and publisher of the digital newspaper, the Alkamba Times. He covers Gambia news. Sene is also a former spokesperson for Gambia's Constitutional Review Commission.
Now, how does Barrow's potential, extension of his tenure impact Gambia's democratic stability? And do you see or foresee the possibility of electoral reforms before 2026, or current status quo remain?
Absolutely, Jackson. There is a lot of total discontent in Banjul right now because many people believe that the president, who's supposed to be the custodians of good governance, democracy, has, refused to uphold those key principles of governance. A lot of people believe that, the president is intending to stay in power because he officially announced last year that he is going to run for third term in office. And this has sent shockwave across the country because many people believe with what happened during Jammeh's time, the same path is what President Barrow is looking, to explore. So Gambians are really divided. His supporters say it's his right to contest third term in office because the 1997 constitution do not have a term limit. But the 2022 draft has a term limit. One reason the lawmakers aligned to the president rejected that particular constitution. So as we speak now, people are telling the president not to contest for third term because we are trying to avoid dictatorship, because Jammeh was in power for 22 years and Adama Barrow contesting for third term will bring his total number of years as a leader to 15 years. They want a president who will only serve 5-year term you know, 2 5-year term, make it 10 year, and his term, 2 second term, end
make
in
it 20,
yeah, in 10 years. So they are trying to avoid, you know, yes, self-perpetuating rule, you know, to avoid what Jammeh did. So they don't want any leader to stay in power for more than 2 terms. And I can tell you, I was part of those who were consulting Gambians on the new draft constitution in 2019. And majority of Gambians, what they say during the consultation is that we don't need a leader that will stay in power for more than 2 terms or 5 years. And now Barrow is seeking the third term in office come 2026 presidential election. So
Let's talk real quick because we are running out of time, but let's talk about the Gambian diaspora of which you are part of. The diaspora remits or contributes significantly to the country's economy. How is the diaspora addressed in the new constitution? How does the, I guess, the rejection of this bill affect political engagement and representation of Gambians living abroad like yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. There is a lot of reaction since the parliament last week rejected the diaspora election bill that would have given the diaspora access to vote in presidential national elections in the Gambia. So when the news broke out that the parliament rejected this bill, there has been a lot of reaction among prominent civil society in the diaspora, political activists. They all believe that, you know, the reason for this is only to allow the president to do whatever he wants to do. Because when you look at other countries like Senegal, you know, the diaspora form part of the electoral system, you know, they vote in elections. So, you know, this would have given us the opportunity to also participate in the electoral process of our country, because Gambia economy is purely driven by the diaspora remittances contribution. As we speak, last month, the diaspora contribute almost $700 million as remittances to the country. So meaning the diaspora is a force to be reckoned with when it comes to the economic development of the country. So not allowing them to take part in the electoral process is something that has also sent shockwave across the diaspora community, you know, globally. So the diaspora are still fighting for them to be represented in parliament, for them to be given the right to vote and be voted in office like in other countries. So the diaspora is shocked with the news that they are not eligible to be part of that democratization process of their country.
Sene Marina, thank you so much for taking time to chat with us today.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thank you, Jackson.
That was Sene M.K. Marina, a Gambian political analyst and publisher of the Alkamba Times. He joined me from Seattle in Washington. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
I think education is not becoming more affordable in the sense that it is becoming very expensive. And so it's not everybody can afford education for their kids. And so I cannot say that, in my opinion, that education is becoming more affordable. The costs are rising because globally, the cost of everything is going up, not just education. So if you talk of feeding, clothing, transportation, everything is going up, and as such, the teachers need to be paid well. The government need to budget and they put high budget on education, and that increases everything, which will be transferred down to parents who pay school fees to maintain their kids in school. And that goes a long way to increase school fees, maintenance of the kids, taking them to school, bringing them back, or even keeping them in boarding schools. They are all increasing the cost of education.
Instead of you having a good education, they tell you good things cost money. And we're going to discover that with the way things are going on now, you may go to an expensive school and yet you don't get what you're looking for.
This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Now, during the COVID-19 pandemic, Ugandan comedian and social commentator Moses Kiboneka found himself at a crossroads. A professional mechanic who also worked side gigs as a master of ceremony at local weddings and events, work had slowed down as he battled a period of depression. He tells me that drawing inspiration from The Daily Show and Jon Stewart's satirical approach to social commentary, he channeled his observations into humor, giving birth to Uncle Mo, a sharp-witted character known for blending comedy with real-life issues. In just a few years, Uncle Mo's videos have been watched by millions of people around the world, especially in Africa, where fans have embraced his hilarious yet insightful takes on a range of issues, from local and global politics to religion and education, among others. He joins me to discuss his journey into comedy, the impact of Uncle Mo the character, and how satire can shape social and political discourse in Africa.
Moses, or Uncle Mo, welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. It's good to finally connect. So let's talk a little bit about how you started, what inspired you, and what inspired this character.
I've always enjoyed watching guys like Jay Leno, Saturday Night Live, for years. And I enjoy how they talk about issues happening in the press. It has been a very interesting way they would put up their opinion. And I was wondering how we don't have that in, say, Uganda, because we didn't have someone doing a show that parodies the news, or I mean, after the serious stuff has been said, you know, like how news feels like it's so about the agenda than the news. Yeah. So I've enjoyed watching people doing that. So I reached out sometime to a TV station, like 10 years ago, it was NTV. So I reached out to them and like, I want to do this. Like after the news, I have my, say, 10 minutes where I talk about my opinion on the news. And they're like, okay, you give us a script and we see how that can look like. So I wrote something down and I went back there. And they looked at it and they're like, okay, this is funny. I think at the time, Uganda was planning to have cable cars. There was a plan that we're going to have cars that fly in the sky. Anyway, so I did a little write-up on how that would go. And I took it to it. I was like, this would be my first episode. The guy who looked at it was like, well, this is going to be fun. I think it's something we can pick up. Then I think he didn't last at the station. He moved on to do other things. And like that,
your concept died like that.
Okay. Around 2016, 2015, Jon Stewart leaves the Daily Show.
Yeah.
So he writes on his Facebook, that very guy was like, it's actually called Moses Sebogo. And he's like, Jon Stewart has left. There's an opening for your work. We joked about it, but I had given up on it at the time. We gave up. COVID comes. I'm home. I was a bit depressed. So many things were not happening in my life. Let me tell you, Jackson, I'm a mechanic. I love repairing. I'm an engineer.
You're actually a real mechanic. The person in Como is based on your real life as a your career.
But in Uganda, who isn't? You keep asking me.
That is a very loaded statement.
People are fixing things. People are fixing marriages. People are fixing jobs. Like someone leaves their job and they're like, I can't believe they've never fired me. Anyway, people have tried. Anyway, apart from repairing cars, when COVID happened, cars were not moving. So I was home just like everyone else. But the other thing that I do, I'm an events host. I MC events, but mostly in Uganda here, weddings. Great, Jackson. When COVID happened, functions were killed. Mm. You know, guys were giving me some deposit here and there. People's marriages started ending. People's relationships ended. Some guys were even calling me, man, can you bring back up?
Refund.
It was. Can you refund us? Like, you guys, that was a you problem. Me, I was ready to MC. If you want me to MC your breakup, I'm still available, but there's no way I'm funding. So anyway, so everything I was doing really stopped.
So main sources of revenue, repairing cars. There were no cars moving on the streets. And then, you know, MCing events, there were no events happening. Basically, you are going through a dry season, like everybody else, really, I'm thinking, during the pandemic.
The biggest problem for men is uncertainty about income. Mm. Like, society has made us to be measured by what we do. So when you're not doing anything, it can
it can start to be depressing. Yeah, I started to get a bit in a dark place about it. So during, I think the first lockdown, a few months had gone by, I was seeing so many people online, making content, people were cooking, burning food, people were working out, people. I was like, I should get back into this thing I wanted to do. The only problem I had was I didn't have the equipment to shoot the content. I think I was taking the content too seriously because I thought I would need to get a camera and gadgets and audio recorders and what. Yeah, you need those things. But one day I was speaking to a lady. I got to church with her. She's called Diana Ringthorpe. The things I do on video right now, I used to write. And she was like, those things you write, we don't have such a reading culture. I wish we were doing them as video. People would really, really enjoy that stuff.
A bit more, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I wanted to do this, but I don't have who can shoot the videos. And she said, you know what? If you write me something and I like it, I'll be ready to come and shoot. Diana was producing church service. She was head of knowing where cameras. I was like, I'll make sure I'll find a way I have a camera to come and shoot your things and bring it back. And like that, we used the church camera and the church sound recorder to do our first like 10 videos. We were idle. It was times when nothing was going on. We had a chance as digital creators that people were home doing nothing.
Yeah. So that was good timing for you to actually, to launch this thing that you've been trying to do for so many years. I was going to ask you, I guess, the question is why you chose the mechanic as your signature look.
And that's a very interesting one.
Yeah.
Because what happened? Now, I've told you who I was benchmarking. Jay Leno, I was benchmarking. Saturday Night Live, I was benchmarking. Jon Stewart. So, of course, I wanted a show that looked like The Daily Show. So when I realized someone is ready to shoot this and can get me equipment, I went to a friend of mine, has a cool office, has a fancy desk. I was like, if we can set this up somehow, we can have The Daily Show Uganda chapter nailed. He was like, fine, but let's, no, he didn't say fine. So I tell him, can I come here and shoot at your office on Sunday? That a very good friend of mine is called Jos. He was like, don't shoot at your garage. He was like, man, we're busy here. you go, maybe your garage. I'm telling you, Jackson, that meant that I don't need lights. I'll shoot during that day. I don't need a place to keep calling people when I want to shoot because the garage is available for me every day. That meant that I didn't have to be Jon Stewart or Jelly or anyone that I have to look for costume. I had my overall that have not changed ever since I started shooting the videos. You know, I'd be talking to some guys that are trying to start content creation. And I'm like, it's not bad to try be like someone. But during that journey, you're going to discover the things you can't be. But that discovery shouldn't make you feel bad about yourself. That is the discovery of the fact that you can't be Jon Stewart, but you can be Uncle Mo. And that's... that's one of the biggest things that will happen to your journey as a digital creator.
Let's talk about some of the things you talk about. Or what's your process of deciding or for deciding which topics to tackle? And do you ever feel pressure to push boundaries further? Or do you have certain red lines that you won't cross in your comedy, in your commentary?
Crossing lines is a very key thing for me. But to deal with that, I have a group of proofreaders. They are like seven, eight people. I send the scripts before I shoot. So those people are all there to help me understand, have I said, there's so many lines that they have thrown out. They're like, that one, we don't say it. No, that, that one is going to cause problems. And you know how society is so sensitive these days. Mm-hmm. So I need that team from time to time. In my position, I have to talk about society. So I have to find a way to keep staying relevant without having to make I would call them amateur mistakes. I think that's what makes it an art, that I should have enough art to talk about certain things without causing problems. Mm. It's hard, but so far I've been successful with it and to stay relevant to the audience that is watching. When I find a topic, I usually want to find a topic that is in press. It helps me to pick up something that already has steam from popular culture and people already talking about it.
how are you able to balance humor with serious issues without getting in trouble? How are you able to create that balance?
There's a brand I'm working with. I've worked with since 2021, and when I was being hired to endorse their products and stuff, they told me it's a regional brand. They told me, the reason why we have chosen you, whereas you talk about politics, religion, sex, and we can't trace you. You're not radical sexist. You're not radical religious. You're not radical political. We can't say which color you are when it comes to politics.
You're kind of a middle of the road commentator.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that lady told me, keep it like that and we shall work with you for a very long time. And I care about paying my electricity bills and water bills. So that choice is easy.
Have you ever received any pushback from politicians or public figures over your content?
The truth is, when it comes to politics, politicians are happy with my content. Everyone is like, we want you to talk about us, like from all sides of the big players in the political landscape in the country. When you have satire as an art, you have a chance to tell people the things that need so much political correctness to say. As satirists, we have a chance. I feel that every message comes down to packaging. Like, the best thing you'll ever hear is drink water. But if some guy just comes in there at your office, I'm like, guys, drink water today, drink water, drink water. With the right packaging, and I think we have a huge responsibility as the people doing things like I do. We have a huge responsibility because we have the gift to package. We can mess it or make it good.
Now, many comedians struggle with longevity. What would you say is next for Uncle Mo? Do you see yourself expanding into TV, into film, live performances? And how do you plan to keep your content fresh and relevant?
I think that's my biggest fear. Because Jackson, I tell you every time, I'm like, okay, but for how long? I keep asking myself, we are doing this, but for how long? But then I see guys in Hollywood, I mean, you see Denzel Washington. Okay, they're outliers. They are less than 1% of best actors. I'm like, they have acted for decades. They have guys who are doing music, and they have been doing music for decades. Probably they are outliers. Probably they are the special ones. So I'd be like, okay, probably I can work hard enough to be among the special ones so I'd stop worrying about it that much. But yeah, it worries me, the longevity question. I have not limited what my growth can turn out to be, but I know my biggest dream is to keep doing this, but telling African stories. The same way the other shows that like I tell you, I used to benchmark The Daily Show. I started benchmarking The Daily Show a very long time ago when Jon Stewart was still on it. Okay, it's now back. And I was thinking, because Africa, we have too much to tell. Too much is going on around African countries. And we share lives, we share, we live near the same way. No? And I'm like, how it should be possible that one day I could break out to do a Daily Show Africa, where we are talking about Botswana, stuff happening in Zambia, stuff happening in Zimbabwe, Uganda, Nigeria, Rwanda. And we are talking about it in a way that we have a good laugh, and it's not just the gloom that is around. Okay, not, I mean,
I like that happening. Idea, and I want to co-sign as a producer of that show, because that would be amazing.
I will be, I'll call you. I'll be like, wait, pack your bag, we go.
Let's do it.
That was Moses Kiboneka, a Ugandan satirist and social commentator who's also behind the character of Uncle Mo. And with that, we come to the end of our show today. Many thanks to our guests and to you, our listeners. Remember to connect with us on our social media platforms. We are at VOA Africa. Let's connect again right here next week. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Have a great week ahead, Africa.
Stay informed and up to date Monday through Friday at 3:30 UTC with VOA's International Edition. Our correspondents bring you the news from around the world. We explore the day's biggest stories with expert analysis and interviews, providing greater understanding for the global audience.
VOA's International Edition, your best source for news and information.